Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Energy storage is on the rise. Batteries and other forms of energy storage are being deployed in ever greater numbers across Europe. Storage can be big or small, in front of the meter or behind the meter. And as technology costs fall and the value of flexibility trends upwards, storage has certainly got a bright future. But as with all things new, it's not plain sailing. Market structures and regulations haven't always been developed with energy storage in mind. New business models need to be created and associated propositions developed for customers. So today we'll be discussing where energy storage is at in Europe and where it's going. I'm delighted to be joined by three guests who are excellently qualified to explore these two questions. My first guest is Eva Chamizo from Spanish-based utility Iberdrola, and she's also president of the European Energy Storage Association. Hello, Eva, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you.
Eva, could you start by giving us a couple of examples of how Iberdrola, one of the biggest utilities in Europe, is working with energy storage today?
Oh, yes. As you have said, energy storage has potential applications in all stages of the value chain of electrical systems. And some of the applications have energy requirements, while others are focused on delivering capacity to the system. So we work on both of them. So for instance, we work with pumping hydro storage that has a clear competitive advantage compared to other technologies for energy applications, because it can produce energy for long, long, long hours. Iberdrola began to work with pumping storage in the late 70s. And the reason why I introduce this is because we sometimes talk about storage, about something that is really new. Well, not exactly. Storage has been in the market for a long time, and it is a necessary element for the transition and for the future, but it's something that already has a lot of technologies working on it. So we began in the late 70s, and now we have more than 3 gigawatts of power and 60 gigawatts per hour of storage capacity. By 2022, when the Tâmega project is completed, because this is the one in which we're working right now, it is in the north of Portugal, and we will own and operate pumping hydro facilities with a total of more than 4 gigawatts of power and with a storage capacity of over 90 gigawatts per hour. So for you to have an idea, it will mean the possibility to produce electricity to 1.2 million consumers during 1 week.
Okay, so
They're
quite big numbers, aren't they, Eva? And I think many of our listeners won't, or it's easy to not appreciate how much energy storage there is today from technologies like pumped hydro. What about on batteries, which are where much of the excitement is, and I don't want to forget pumped hydro, but could you give us a feel of how Iberdrola might be working with one of the newer technologies?
Oh, yes, of course. So as I was telling you, batteries is another element in which we're working. And in June this year, Scottish Power plans for the UK's largest wind farm have been approved by the Scottish government. So Whiteley will have its own purpose-built battery storage plant on site, and it will be one of the biggest batteries projects in the UK. So it will be charged with clean, green, renewable power from 537-megawatt wind farm. The plant battery storage centre will maximise the renewable electricity integration and support the national grid in maintaining the resilience and stability of the electricity grid, even at times when wind may not be blowing. So this is first for a wind farm in the UK at this scale. So the battery storage size will be the size of half a football pitch and will comprise a lithium-ion battery technology with 50 megawatt of capacity and 25 megawatts per hour of storage of energy. So as you see, we're working both in pumping and also batteries at large scale.
Okay. I'm particularly excited about that second project, Eva, because I can see Whiteley Wind Farm from my house in Glasgow. So I'm not sure I'll be able to see the battery from my house, but I'll be able to know it's there and see
I hope not. I hope not.
the light. Thanks, Eva. So my second guest is Patrick Clearance, Secretary General of the European Energy Storage Association. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Patrick, Eva's told us a bit about pump storage and batteries. Are these, when we think of energy storage, as I said before, many people automatically think of batteries. They're exciting and they're new. Pump storage is very significant in terms of capacity. Are there other forms of energy storage that we should be thinking about as well, in addition to these two?
Actually, we managed in EES to categorize all the energy storage technologies, and we've put them down in five different families.
Okay,
We put them down in five different families because they have five different distinct specificities. And these technologies can be either the chemical ones, which is longer-term storage, which is starting to be more and more seen on the market, which is mainly driven by hydrogen, so it's hydrogen electrolyzers, hydrogen generation, and then you can do any kind of chemicals you want with those. You can work with methanol or ammonia or synthetic natural gas. So this is the one which is mainly for longer term storage. Then you see obviously the batteries, which is the electrochemical one, but there you see a new evolution with so-called flow batteries. These are batteries who can hold way more energy than the classical batteries as you know today. Then obviously there's still this electrical energy storage, which is this balloons on birthday parties which attract the dust and your hair, at least if you have some hair. And this is static electricity. These are the supercapacitor and magnetic supercapacitor. And the last two ones is the mechanical one, which is the oldest, which is the pump hydro, let's say, or compressed air or liquefied air. These are the mechanical one. Also flywheels you would count in these, so it's just rotating masses. And then the last one, which is the cheapest way of storing, is the thermal storage. This is a way where you would use the heat property of either molten salt or materials or ceramics or whatever to store the heat and then use it mainly in heat form, but you could potentially re-electrify it. So there are a lot of different technologies. And to come back to your question about what we're talking about in quantities, I mean, we are doing the European Market Monitoring for Energy Storage, which is a reference document on the European market. And we'll talk of this, I suppose, in a moment. But we have also in very clearly seen that the overwhelming majority of the installed capacity today is still pump hydro storage. We're talking about capacity of something 96% of all installed capacity in Europe is pump hydro storage.
Okay,
And when
so
you look how much energy,
when we think of
how
storage
much
then.
energy is contained, it's 99% roughly.
So when we think of storage today, Patrick, we have to keep in mind that the vast majority of that, as you said, 96% or 99% by energy or capacity, is pumped hydro. Patrick, why do you see so much excitement then about batteries? And do you think other technologies are not getting the attention that they deserve at the moment? Are people too focused on electrochemical batteries at the moment?
So for the moment, you see, as you rightly said, a lot of attention for batteries, mainly lithium-ion batteries. And this is due to the fact that the prices have been dropping radically on for these technologies. In the last years, you saw drops of 80% compared to before. So it's really huge price drops, which makes them readily available. And therefore, you can stack them very easily and put them wherever you want. So there's no natural requirement of a higher reservoir and lower reservoir, or height difference, or anything else. No cavern, you need nothing. So this is allowing for these batteries to deploy more and more. The next factor is that you see the electric cars which are coming. We all see the Paris Agreement. We all see what's happening on climate change, about CO2 reduction, and we see that transport is the only sector which increased its CO2 emissions in the last years compared to all the other sectors. So there is a huge need for electromobility. And therefore, the batteries which allow for this electromobility are so much on the rise. And all the other activities we can do with these batteries, like home storage and so on.
Now let's bring in my last guest, Andy Bradley from Delta EE. Hello,
hi.
Andy.
Hi, John.
Andy, you've been leading some analysis at the European Market Monitor that Patrick mentioned about the energy storage market in partnership with EES. We've heard about the big numbers of pumped hydro. As Patrick alluded to, pumped hydro is great, but it requires specific geographic circumstances. So you can't put it everywhere, and there's probably a limited amount that could be developed. So I'd like to now look at the growth in the market and see how much new storage capacity is being added. So can you give us a flavour for how much capacity is being added and how quickly the market is growing today?
Yeah, sure. Patrick mentioned the report that we're producing very closely with EES and its members, looking at the European energy storage market. It's the European Market Monitor on Energy Storage. And the last edition of that report we did showed that in 2018, about 1.1 gigawatt hours of electrical storage was added to the system, or just under a gigawatt of power added to the system, primarily as lithium-ion batteries, as Patrick mentioned. So it's still a small part of the total energy storage available in the energy system, but it's growing quite quickly, or very quickly, actually. And looking back at some of the numbers, I mean, the electrical energy storage market doubled in size in kind of the 2015 to 2017 period. So it doubled in size in 2 years, and then it doubled in size again between 2017 and 2019. So, you know, that's an exponential rate of growth. Now, clearly, big question, can the market maintain that rate of growth into coming years? I mean, we certainly see it growing this year and growing in 2020, but it's probably unlikely the market will double in size in the 2019 to 2021 period, but it might take 3 years, for example.
Yeah, it's easy to double a small number and harder to double a bigger number.
Absolutely right. But for sure, the market is growing very, very quickly, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of the ways in which it's growing in a few minutes.
And in terms of where that growth is coming from, you could cut that in different ways, but one way you can cut it is behind the meter and in front of the meter. Mm-hmm. And the example Eva gave about the wind farm I can see from my house in Glasgow and the big storage facility there, that's a great in front of the meter example. A behind the meter example might be a solar panel with a battery and a house, for example. So what's that balance of in front of meter and behind the meter? Is most of the growth coming from one or the other, or is it split?
It's split, actually, and it does vary year to year. And front of the meter is typically a smaller number of bigger projects. Mm-hmm. So in any 1 year, like last year, actually, 2018, the front of the meter space grew quicker than we had anticipated, actually, because a larger number of grid scale projects were realized before the end of 2018. Mm-hmm. But the behind the meter space is also growing quickly, both in the residential area, but also in the kind of commercial and industrial area. So behind the meter projects at a commercial or industrial sites. So both parts of the market are growing quickly, I think.
Okay.
Maybe I just can add one sentence, John, if you allow me.
Yeah, carry on.
I think we are all aware that there is this Clean Energy for All Europeans package which has been done, which has many the electricity regulation and directive. And in there, there's a quite neat feature which has been included. So the consumers in Europe may now choose to have a variable tariff, electricity tariff, meaning they're exposed to the wholesale prices. And this would mean that if you have a good storage at home and maybe some PV and others, you could also buy electricity from the market or take it from the market at the moment when the prices are negative. So nobody knows how this feature will be implemented in detail, but you're in theory now entitled to be exposed to wholesale prices. And we know they're getting more and more negative prices. So this is really an opportunity also for consumers to be more energy independent, meaning having more batteries at home. So this will for sure be a driver for the next years on how storage will be deployed.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I mean, when you look at the European market, we talk about the European market, but actually it's currently really two big markets. There's Germany and there's UK. Actually, there are markets in obviously many other countries, but in terms of scale, I think Germany is 3/4 of the residential market in Europe. About 75% of residential energy storage is located in Germany. And in terms of the front of the meter space, 60% or so of the market last year was in the UK. So the market still, we talk about the European market, but the market is still actually quite concentrated in some markets. So there's huge potential for the for these propositions and developments to be get traction in a large number of other countries in Europe, I think.
Yeah, so you could look at that in two ways, couldn't you? You could say either UK and Germany are unique, and that's why they've got a lot of this new capacity, and nowhere else is the same and nowhere else is going to follow. Or you could say UK and Germany are the front runners and everywhere else is going to follow. Yeah. Which of those, well, I know what you're going to say.
We'll come on to our crystal ball later.
Yeah, on, okay.
But I'm picking up on Patrick's point. I absolutely agree. The CEP, the Clean Energy Package, is a really fundamental instrument, I think, to shaping the future of the energy storage markets in Europe. And I'm sure we'll pick up on that later. But it's one of the drivers which will continue to support growth, I think.
Eva, can I come back to you and Iberdrola? What's your observation on how the market is growing and this difference between big front-of-meter projects, like you described at Whiteley, and small behind-the-meter projects at houses or commercial or industrial customers? Do you see one or the other as more or less interesting to a company like Iberdrola?
Well, we are a big company, so we tend to work with large storage projects. So obviously, in front of the meter, we are, let's say, more focused because of our capacities. But we have also been involved, and we also think that there is a development in behind the meter products. And we have been launching products in niche markets where these technologies can make sense in the short term. So we have projects that are smart solar. So we go to residential, or even we envisage to talk to industries, because as was said before by my colleagues, the market is going to be needing the storage in both sides. But also as a big utility, we have more focus in front of the meter, because this is probably, well, of course, this is something that you need more investment and the bigger size to do. And also because what we are going to be needing is we are integrating renewables, and we are going to a system that is going to be based in these renewables with no fossil fuels as backup. So the system is going to rely massively on storage. So we will be obliged to give responses at large scale and also a small scale. But large scale has to be, in terms of security of supply, a very important focus. And also we're going to be working not only in the electricity sector, but also because the decarbonization goes to all sectors, we will be in the heating and cooling sectors, and so far they are they need probably more capacity than what residential storage, so behind the meter, is being able to provide. So this is why I think that there is a market for both, but probably we are more focused in front of the meter storage.
And I can see the fit with a company like Iberdrola that's, as you say, used to be developing wind farms, large capital projects. A big storage facility fits very well with that that type of business. But Eva, what are there one or two challenges or practical issues that you've had to overcome? So whether it's a Whiteley project or another front of meter big storage project, can you give us a feel for what's challenging, hard, or difficult, or maybe surprising about developing these types of projects?
Yes, of course. In terms of the practical issues involved in the deploying of storage today, well, first of all, as I was saying, we're going to be needing large storage. I mean, it is important to know that, for instance, the national plans that the member states are presenting, for instance, in Spain, Spain has set a target of 2.5 gigawatt of battery storage and 3.5 gigawatt of new pipe and hydro. So what I mean is these will have to be a combination of in front of the meter and behind the meter, but in front of the meter needs a lot of work and that. So what do we need as investors, and what's the problem that we have been discussing all through the clean energy package? Of course, we need long-term vision in the revenue streams. And any final investment decision in companies, these decisions are taken based on the certainty of the long revenue that we are having. And there are programs like the EFR in the UK or DS3 in Ireland that address correctly this issue. So I think that the clean energy package has established a framework in which we will be able as investors to have long-term vision, because it's what large projects need. And at DSO level...
Eva, can I just on those frameworks, so I can completely appreciate that. So with renewables projects, you might have a feed-in tariff or some guarantee of the revenue stream. With storage, you need that framework for the revenues. How far away, or how close or far away are we from having the details of that kind of framework in place in different countries, where the revenue streams for storage are indeed quite predictable and comfortable for investment decisions? Are we close to that certainty, or do we still have a long way to go to enable a company like Iberdrola to invest in storage across different countries?
No, I think, of course, different countries have different realities. We are present in a lot of countries, but a lot in Spain. I think that it is coming. I think that the clarity of decarbonization is creating the need to have security of supply based on a decarbonized way of storage of energy, and storage, of course, is giving this. So I think that because with the national plans, I think the national plans have been one of the most important elements in the clean energy plan, in the clean energy package, sorry, because member states have thought that they really have to give an answer to decarbonization, and storage is one of the biggest elements. So I think we are close to, renewables began with a need to have long-term vision with, and it was through public aid. And now we see a market for renewables, for instance, with a PPAs. We have corporate solutions that go in the market. And storage will need some way to go as well. But I think that we have already the experience with renewables, and it will come. The long-term vision is coming. I don't think it is something that will be, I think that member states now understand that this is a necessity for decarbonization, so it's coming.
Okay, that's encouraging to hear. Patrick, can I ask you about the perspective of your members? You've got a whole range of different types of companies active in the storage value chain. What's their mood at the moment? Are they excited about the market? Are they frustrated at lack of clarity on certain issues? Are they thriving? Are there too many people trying to sell batteries at the moment? Can you give us a sense of how your members are feeling about the market at the moment?
Yes, sure. So Andy said very well where the markets are for the moment, the biggest markets. We see this behind in front of the meter in the UK or Germany. Mm-hmm. We see also other business cases which are a bit everywhere in Europe, which is system services, or what is emerging now is also to balance renewables on isolated systems. So you can have this on islands, but also less interconnected. So there are very clear markets for energy storage today where companies make money. But the need for energy storage is very often not remunerated. I give you two examples. First of all, when you talk about balancing the system, frequency containment reserve, you're paid by capacity. So everyone who's providing frequency containment is getting the same payment for the megawatt, one megawatt of capacity available. Now, very often, the batteries who are earning money from the system services react way faster than the conventional generation would, gas or coal plants or others, which means in turn that they are doing the heavy lifting and also getting the frequency to 50 hertz again before the conventional generators start even to inference or to lift the frequency, which means that the job is done by the storage, but everybody gets the same payment. And that's something which is not working. So if you do better system services, faster system services, you should be remunerated in a better way or more or higher way. This is the case in the UK, as it was mentioned before, or in Ireland, as was mentioned before, but very often on the continent where they don't feel the heat like they do on islands, it's not the case. So that's a bit frustrating to see that we do more work, but we get the same revenues.
And that's, and then, Patrick, that's an example, I guess, of the market structures and regulations needing to keep up and move quick enough and not always doing so.
That's true, but it's also the question on the on actually it is how can you monetize a system service which is a service to the whole society, to the whole electricity or energy system as such, mm-hmm. but where only one person is actually putting the technology down and invest in this technology. So the added value is dispersed between all people. And how do you monetize such a service? And that's the difficult part.
Yeah.
And this is where we are asking for new services by the TSO, tendered by the transmission system operator, or maybe distribution system operator in future. We're discussing for the moment to have a more active distribution system operator also, mm-hmm. and to have this, therefore, capture this added value and be able to monetize this added value.
Okay.
And the same question, just to finalize, will be also on seasonal storage. We want to decarbonize in 2050. We want to increase the targets where for 2030 with the new commission. The European Green Deal is on the table. Newer or harsher targets for renewables, for decarbonization will come in, which means that we need to get there. But nobody knows how we will get energy from the windy times to the less windy times or from the sunny times to the less sunny times.
Yeah.
Because there's no business case for this.
Okay, so more needed to do on the regulatory front, on the market structures, on remuneration. It's that time in the podcast already when we're having to get our crystal ball out. So let me just pick it up and put it down on the table in front of us.
You broke it.
No, not yet. Well, I did break it trying to use it for Brexit the other day, so I'm not going to make that mistake again. Crystal ball time. Let's set the dial on the crystal ball to 2030. And I'd like to think about whether you answer this in numbers or qualitatively, how much storage there will be deployed between now and 2030, and any inclination as to what will be on the front of the meter and behind the meter. So Eva, starting with you, how much storage will we see, and answer this in whichever way you'd like, will we see between now and 2030, and what type of storage?
Well, getting into such numbers is not easy, so I will try to concentrate them in one member state, the one that I know better, that's Spain.
Yep.
And Spain has calculated, and I think that other member states have done in their national plans, the amount of storage they will be needing in order to correctly integrate the renewables that will be coming. And as Patrick just said, when you don't have wind and you don't have sun or you don't have water, you need storage. And what they have said is that they will be needing more or less 6 gigawatts of batteries, of storage.
Yeah.
In Spain, taking into account the particular conditions, because this is one of the questions that is very important, is no solution is valid for all member states. Mm-hmm. Spain has a very particular situation in terms of possibilities of pumping hydro. So this is why 3.0 gigawatt have been considered that will come from that technology, and 2.5 from battery. And then how it will be distributed in front of the meter or behind the meter, I think we need to do a lot of calculation yet. It depends also on the way that every member state is housing and residential is composed. As you were saying, Germany, for instance, has a lot of houses, individual houses. It's not the case in Spain when you have a lot of buildings.
Mm.
So all those elements make that the decisions have to be adapted to the circumstances of the different populations and member states.
Okay, so I'm inferring there may be a bit more front of meter in Spain than maybe in somewhere like Germany. And if I had to ask a very cruel yes or no answer, Eva, do you think Spain will reach that 6 gigawatt target?
Well, we are trying to do all our best for, I mean, from the Iberdrola point of view. So I really hope that we can provide it, because this is probably the only way to decarbonization. So I think it is, I think it is something that we have to work to move. So the state will have to do its job in terms of guaranteeing the long term that we were talking about in terms of investment, simplification of the administrative procedures, etc. Mm-hmm. So it is feasible. We will need to work for it. But I don't think we have a lot of different possibilities if we really want to decarbonize.
Okay, thanks, Eva. Patrick, what do you see when you gaze into the crystal ball in 2030?
Yes, I put it on the wrong time frame. I put it on 2050. So I'll try to talk back from the 2050 time frame. There was a very interesting study. So let's continue in Spain. In Spain, there was a study from the utility, and Euroelectric published it then, the Association of Utilities, European Association of Electricity Utilities. And they said, so imagine we're in 2050 in Spain, and we have 70 gigawatt of peak demand. Mm-hmm. They calculated, in order to balance, which in Spain would be mainly PV electricity, to balance this over the day to meet the noon peak over the day demands and night demands, mm-hmm. they would shift around 345 gigawatt hours over one day.
Wow.
So these are huge sums. 345 gigawatt hours are huge sums. And this is for 70 gigawatt of peak demand. It's roughly what Germany uses today. Yep. This is for over the day. Now, if you see that this is in a decarbonized society, so let's say 100% renewables, and if you foresee that you want to go in 2030 to 50% renewables, that's roughly what we're aiming at for the moment, and this is what at least climate campaigner asks us to do, then we would need roughly half or a bit less than half of this, because we have some more dispatchable generation. So we would still end up with something like, I don't know, 150 to 200 gigawatt hours need to shift around over one day. This is huge amounts of energy we're talking about, electricity we're talking about. And this is for the daily balancing. Mm. When you now look at the forecast in 2050 with the same energy system, electricity system of Spain, you want to go to seasonal balancing, taking the excess electricity of March, April, and May, and put this to the part October, November, and December when you really need it, then you're talking about a seasonal need in 2050 of 25,000 gigawatt hours for seasonal energy movement from one side to the other. And now we are talking really big numbers and energy which need to be stored for 3, 4, 5 months.
So even if we get close to those numbers, Patrick, as you say, they are huge numbers, and they'll need every bit of storage we can find, be it hydrogen, pumped hydro, electrical, thermal, and so on.
Yes, because the batteries are such, and now we're coming back to the technology question right in the beginning, for the moment or in the last years, we had battery production, which is limited. In 2020, we are expected to have, I don't know, 180 gigawatt hours of battery we can produce a year. Mm. The yearly global production is 180 gigawatt hours or something like this in 2020, which means that if you want to have 345 gigawatt hours to move around, and this is only Spain,
yeah,
you cannot solve this with batteries only. This is not possible.
So we'll need everything.
When you talk about the seasonal storage, it will be way too expensive. So yeah. That's why we are advocating, also on the policymaker side, that we need a technology-neutral framework, mm. which allows all technologies which store energy, be it in a heat form, in a gaseous form, liquid form, electrochemical, whatever it is, to be supported. And not only to support lithium-ion batteries, as it is very often done today. Not only, but very often done today.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. Andy, last but not least, what do you see in the crystal ball?
I see lots of growth The question is how much growth and how fast. I think what Patrick said there is absolutely right. The demand and need for flexibility in our energy system in Europe over the next 10 years and beyond is strong, and it will only get stronger. I suppose from the energy storage perspective, thinking about battery storage, the question is how much of that will be batteries. So just while Patrick was talking there, thinking about that question, I mean, looking at the European market today and how we see it growing in the next, say, 2, 3, 4 years, and then going out to 2030, I'd say, you know, 25, 35, 40 gigawatt hours of electrical energy storage perhaps would look reasonable based on the growth in the market for battery storage over the last years and how we see it going in the near term. There are some big drivers and unknowns, of course, the role of V2G, for example, vehicle to grid technologies and how significant will they become by 2030? Will stationary storage still be the dominant part of the market, or will the EV market be contributing in a significant way? What happens when the FIT tariffs for many residential customers of PV in Europe start to phase out post 2021 in Germany and many other countries? And how much will that spur the uptake of household batteries across Europe in different countries, not just UK and Germany and Italy, you know, the ones we've mentioned? Co-locating storage, stationary storage with EV recharging, we see that as one of the big applications and big opportunities in the near term. So there's lots of exciting developments around second life batteries, and people even talking about third life batteries recently, I hear about. So, you know, the number of applications that we see and the use cases for energy storage is large today and will only get bigger. So overall, I think the market is bound to get much bigger, but we mustn't forget that the energy transition encompasses all of the energy sources we've talked about. So electrical energy storage, battery storage, will only be one part of that source of flexibility.
I think that's my takeaway from today, actually, that rather than thinking of an energy storage market, there are many, many energy storage markets, plural. They change from country to country. Big plants like Eva described at Whiteley through to behind the meter storage, hydrogen, thermal storage, electrochemical, batteries, there's a whole variety of applications. And the market will grow strongly, but it won't grow in one way, it will grow in many ways.
Absolutely. And to come back to your question that I think you were trying to get to, is it going to be mainly front of the meter or behind the meter? My personal view is that it's probably a 60-40, 70-30 split overall, and I'm betting more on behind the meter space.
Okay. Well, as I tell all my guests, we'll bring you back in 2030 and see if these predictions are right or wrong. So that draws us to the end of the podcast today. We hope that you've enjoyed listening and are equally engaged, maybe even equally excited about energy storage. So thanks for listening. Thanks to my guests. Thank you very much, Eva. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
John, thank you very much for hosting.
And thank you to Andy.
That's good. Thank you.
And we'll be back with a new episode from Talking New Energy next week. Goodbye.